My name is Gary Butterfield.
My name is Cole Ross.
And you're listening to Watch Out for Fireballs. It is a Games Club podcast.
And this week we are talking about Infernax, which is a Metroidvania platformer developed by Berserk Studio and published by the Arcade Crew for PC and contemporary consoles in 2022.
Yeah. Welcome to Cole Ross's all-time best vanity pick.
I think this game slaps. It's really good. I also think I've brought some pretty good vanity picks.
Oh, sure. I mean, it's cool to think things, but honestly, it's very good. I'm giving you shit.
I know.
I'm kicking you in the balls verbally as men do.
Yes, as men are, as men are wont to do. No, yeah, it's my
guys
broken
being
brain.
Dudes, kicking balls, taking names.
I just it is my own emotional problem that I cannot hear that compliment without immediately focusing on the insult that it infers.
It was a mean compliment. That was the intent. So it's
okay.
It's all right. But what is it? What a pleasant surprise.
I know. I picked this because I had heard good things and it kind of seemed right up the alley for the show. I had never played it. I had heard David describe it on the level. Thought, oh yeah, that sounds kind of rad. Didn't expect it to be this good.
Yeah, it's actually super rad. It's also, this is not a plot-based game.
No.
But I'm going to do a rare thing that if you have any affection for NES platformers, I think that you should go out and play this before you listen to the episode. Because you will clap like a circus seal in delight at all of the ways it references and subverts and handles those things.
Yeah.
If you're anything like me. So I'm glad I went into this knowing nothing because it was basically impossible to put down.
Yeah.
I chugged this, I think, in two sittings.
Oh, wow.
I fucking loved this. So,
yeah. I finished this one. Maybe three. I finished this one into play more, and that's something that also speaks to the recommendation, which is this is a short game to play through at once. However, it is very dense, and there are ways that it can differ very substantially depending on some stuff that you do. So this is I want to see how different versions of the story go, like what new bosses do I see and stuff, which is another way of saying we didn't see everything for this. I think both of us played pretty similar playthroughs, but
yeah, I got the ultimate good ending of this through that, but not the one where if you get your demonology score up high enough.
I
didn't get that one, which we'll talk about when we and I don't know how I missed it. But we'll talk about all that stuff and it all makes sense. This is all just a lot of preamble to say, like, I think you should probably play this game.
Probably.
It's extremely good. Like, in refreshing my memory for it, it was all I could do to just not just start a new playthrough. It's very good.
In this game, you play as Duke Alcidor, who returns from the Crusades only to find that his homeland of has been overtaken
Upel
by...
Upel sounds better.
Yeah, Upel sounds better. I should say Upel. Has been overtaken by demons, the undead, and cultists. We've got Necronomicons about.
Yes, including the titular Necronomicon. And this is a 2D platformer, kind of a Metroidvania game that models itself after Castlevania 2 and Zelda 2. kind of both. A way to think about this is Shovel Knight is to DuckTales, as this is to Castlevania 2.
Very good analogy. Yeah.
Yeah. Like it is the version with the same amount of care and everything of the Shovel Knight series, which I fucking adore, of taking the way you remember, like the best possible version of the way you remember this could be.
Yeah.
And making it.
And we joked about it when we were, you know, hyping up this game earlier in this episode, you know, earlier, which is like, oh, we say, oh, it models itself after Simon's Quest and Link's Adventure. And then like, no, but not in the bad way, like not in the way that you might think with these being disappointing sequels to beloved games. No. And I mean, like we can be sickos who like both of those games for their own individual reasons. This feels like going back to those and fulfilling the promise of what they could have been.
Yes.
Yeah.
You take away the time curve, you know, like we both like Castlevania 2. We're on record as liking Castlevania 2.
Yeah. Whole episode about it.
Part of that is when it came out, you know, in its context in the series. So there's a context curve with Castlevania 2. This just gets rid of the context curve. You know, it's updated to modern sensibilities.
Yeah.
When we say a Metroidvania that models itself on that, we have a big interconnected overworld that's done from a side-scrolling perspective. You know, you fight enemies, you do these little quests. The quest structure on this is really neat. And then you go and you find a certain number of bespoke, large, self-contained dungeons.
Yes.
That you go through.
That also have their own like little maps. It's structured very much like Castlevania 2 is. I specify that the overworld is side scrolling because people might think, oh, Zelda 2, this has that weird top down overworld. No, different thing. Yeah.
And unlike Castlevania 2, so we both like Castlevania 2, but the worst problem with it is the dungeons feel really kind of haphazard. You know, there are cool little, like, I'll always remember the sequence of the invisible floors, you know, in that first dungeon. Like, there are bits that are still memorable, but a lot of it does feel kind of random.
Sloppy, featureless mazes. Yeah.
Yes. This does not do that at all.
Yeah.
These are designed like levels. You know, you go through them, you go and you get, and here's also where they're a little bit Castlevania 2 and they're also a lot Zelda 2, but with the key structure.
Yes.
Key and special item structure of the dungeons. And the Zelda 2 dungeons, I think, are pretty impeccable. Like, I think those are good. Those that need fixing. These are just easier and have better bosses.
Yes.
You know? Like Zelda 2, you have a short-range melee attack. As default, you attack with a mace. You also have a shield that will always block as long as you're not attacking. Again, Zelda 2 stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. Not as much emphasis on, like, sword fighting. In this as there is in Zelda 2, which is something I really enjoy about it. You know, it is good to have that block up for projectiles, especially when you get into palaces that are more trap heavy. And eventually you get like a parry so you can kick stuff back at enemies. It's real cool.
And because I want to make sure I don't forget this. The parry you get makes the same sound effect from Monster Party. This is full of loving like little Easter eggs.
I didn't realize that to
8-bit side-scrolling games, both obscure and popular. There are bigger shout outs that we'll talk about when we get to them, but I was just like, I recognize that fucking noise.
It's like a ting sound.
Is making that's the same noise as when the little Mark guy hits a plant seed back with a baseball bat in a Monster Party.
God, Monster Party's good.
Yeah. It gets so bad. I know. Floated in my head the idea of doing it for the show so many times because the stuff that happens is so funny. But God, like the last two levels are just big anonymous mazes. Like,
yeah, that's bad.
My genuine attempts to beat Monster Party have been sad.
An important thing about the feel of this game is that they do pull from Castlevania for the wind-up frames for both your attack and for your jump. So that is worth factoring in, though it is not a fixed height jump, like Castlevania is, and you know, you can control your direction midair and stuff like that.
There are also degrees of this as well. We'll talk about this when we start talking about alternate characters. So like your default character, has a Castlevania delay, but it's a lot snappier than some of the other characters. They pay more direct homage to Castlevania than some other characters. You also get magical spells. Have a variety of effects, again, similar to Zelda 2. These either serve in combat or for exploration, kind of unlocking these new areas.
Yeah. In addition to like skills and stuff, you get like a, you know, what a, this game's version of like a vertical double jump and a horizontal double jump, which is important. Also important, I think, is to discuss this game's difficulty options. This is a difficult game. You know, you're, there's a little bit of a Dark Souls kind of curve to this. You're, you know, on the overworld, you're finding these shrines that act as your checkpoints. You always respawn at the last checkpoint that you visited. But by default, in the classic restart mode, this is emulating the old NES difficulty.
Yes. Specifically what that means is when you die, you restart and you lose all your progress.
Right.
It's like you saved your game.
Also falling like doing a death fall, you know, into a pit or acid or lava counts as a death, but in casual restart mode all these details change a little bit.
There's also casual restart mode, so you do respawn, you get half of your XP and health there when you fall into a pit, or when you know you quote unquote die there. The biggest difference for casual restart mode though is it adds mid-dungeon checkpoints. These two difficulty modes, I think, are really important. Because casual restart can be a bad word with the gamer Americans. But this is non-condescending. And when I say non-condescending, I mean, not only does it have the language of condescension, like, you know, baby mode, put on the chicken hat, go die in the corner, you know, lick the cat's butthole. Like, it's not doing that shit to you. It also doesn't dumb down the encounters.
Right.
So casual mode in this just cuts down on fuck you, do it again, as a fail condition. Right.
Yeah.
Like we talk, you know, sometimes people have asked, like, what do you want instead of that? Like when you complain about that, I want this.
Yeah.
I fall in a pit and like I get a few chances to fall into a pit. And even though the level design in this game is really good, there are like blind jumps in the last couple dungeons where you can fall in a pit without knowing. You're going to fall in a pit. It's very useful to not have to start the whole dungeon over.
Also, the later dungeons get really long. Like,
they're very long.
Yeah. I only had to make a run. I tried to stay on classic as long as I could. But like, I don't know, even the first dungeon, I got sick and tired of doing the first part of that again because I'm still learning the game. Right. And I switched to casual restart after speaking to you and finding out that like a better word for it would just be like modern restart.
Yeah. Yeah, just does not make the enemies have less health, hit worse, or anything like that. The way the dungeons are meant to be done in Classic is you make delves into them for those keys. Yeah. Like, they all are kind of designed among this the spoke system from the intro or from the entrance. So, the you know, you go and you do the first part, you come out and save with the key, go to the second part, come back out, save, then go for the boss would be how they want you to do it. But that's just a lot of shuttle running. I don't feel like cutting that out hurts me at all. Like, I don't feel like I missed out on anything. So if you're at all put off by the difficulty of this, don't be scared by casual restart. It's not going to hurt you. And if you're scared, if you're like, oh, that doesn't seem like enough, there are also tons of Celeste-like difficulty options in the menu, including like infinite double jump, things like that. Like, you can obviate the platforming in this if you want to. Have it your way. You know, which is always the duck feed preferred stance.
Yes. This was added after release. So if you're listening to this saying this was too hard and I didn't see this, possible it wasn't there when you played. So now you have no excuse not to go back and play this awesome game.
Get to it. This is an RPG. Like, it has RPG elements. As you defeat enemies, you get experience points, which you can spend at these checkpoints in order to improve your three stats, similar to Zelda 2, health, attack, and mana.
Yes. You also get money that can be spent to buy better gear at different villages, and also buy additional potion bottles at different towns to fill up these alchemists. Health potions are free, but you don't want to fill up your bottle on those. Once you get the heal spell, just get the mana ones, because it's a full heal anyway. So,
yeah. And eventually you can get the Por Que No Los Dos special, and you will run out of things to spend money on.
Yes.
In this game. There's a day night cycle in this game. It generally doesn't affect the villages. There's one it does, but it fills the overworld with tougher monsters that give more experience and more money. You know, so similar to Castlevania 2, you have that a little bit of a grind cycle, you know, if you need it, if you need want to go get some money to get a spell. But also you have that I'm on an excursion. I hope it doesn't turn to nighttime before I hit the next checkpoint shit, it's nighttime feeling, which is great. Like, that's a, you know, an awesome bit of tension.
Yeah. Also, it's just a quick little animation that plays. You don't have to watch the text go.
Yes. Yep. It happens super fast.
Yeah.
You also get a spell that flips it from day to night.
Mm-hmm.
Eventually. What a great ease of use.
Oh, yeah.
You know, thing.
Yeah. The other thing that is notable about this game is its morality system. There'll be times when you're exploring where you will come across a situation, and you get a choice between two options for resolving it. And it's not always obvious how these are going to turn out, right? Sparing somebody's life is not always the best way to go about things.
It's always the worst one.
Yep.
Like it is Old Testament. You know, it's not obvious how these go if you play used to playing video games,
right?
Because it bucks conventional trends. This has an intense, and the game is not serious. The game is very funny.
Mm-hmm.
But this is going to sound dour, what I'm going to say, but it's not dour. It has an intensely black and white morality, to it. Old Testament evil is there to be smote.
Yes.
And if something is evil, it is evil. It is, you know, contagious. Destroy
suffer,
it.
That suffer is, it not to live. Yeah,
exactly. Like you kind of the most fun you can have doing the good path in this is role playing as like a Templar kind of character. And you're rewarded with an appropriately like Warhammer-esque, ending of scourging the land.
There is a morality score, and this has some ongoing consequences. This will affect your ending. This will affect certain like quests, whether or not the people will open up and ask you to do something.
Your verb set as well.
Yeah.
Your spells will be different.
Yes.
Depending on this, which I think is really cool.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So whole quest chains can be opened up or cut off by some of these major and minor decisions. They're not always presented as like the big, beautiful, punch out scene where you're picking from the left side of the screen to the right side of the screen. Sometimes just a dialogue option. But this is one of the main ways in which the game can branch.
Yes. Makes it very replayable. I did that very good ending. Doing an evil ending sounds badass.
Yeah.
And I haven't done it. I'm sure I'll do it. I haven't uninstalled this yet, even though I beat it like weeks ago. This game has cheats. You can enter something called the Game Wizard, which is like similar to the Game Genie, and put in these cheat codes. The game will give them to you for endings. You can also look them up. Mm-hmm. And these are nuts. These change things a lot. You can have a chainsaw. You can ride a motorcycle. vehicle combat which is basically kind of an invincibility, no platforming mode. Like things don't hurt you in it, but you have to get on and off your motorcycle to talk to people.
Yep.
And stuff. Things like that.
Jetpack mode. Yeah.
Jetpack mode. This is in concert with naming your character different things and having drastically different verbs.
Yep.
For things. So like you play through this as a cleric basically, or like a paladin, mace and spells. But you can play through it as a wizard. If you want to, there's a wizard mode. You have a mace and a shield, but if you want a two-handed sword and forego that protection for reach, you can. Things like that. You can play the game very differently.
Yeah.
With that. On top of a co-op mode, which you can have, which is either true co-op, or you can have a sidekick with you that is kind of like ice climbers.
Yeah.
Almost like you can switch whenever you need to. And they have a bunch of items that are analogs to classic Castlevania sub weapons. It's so in love with the cool things about the NES.
Yep.
You know, like it doesn't come off as cloying at all. Like it feels so genuine. You know, you can describe this and it can sound like the Ready Player One for Castlevania, you know, but it's really not. It doesn't come off that way at all.
Yeah. I mean, and then this is a detail from development, but like that co-op mode, like that was part of an update. Like this is, you know, it has the like extremely generous modern indie game, you know, post release cycle, to
yes.
it. Which is real charming. Also real charming is the fact that it honors the Konami code.
Honors it in an incredible way, where you start with 30, you become a guy named Maxime Gun, Lord Maxime Gun, and you start with 30 lives and a machine gun, and the counter jump, and all of your verbs are changed. So spells that you have, instead of casting a spell, will turn your gun into the spreadshot. Instead of getting the vertical dash, you get the contra double jump. Things like that. It's so goddamn loving. It just the affection and care that went into this is just so sweet.
I just love just running through the countryside, gunning everything down.
Yes, my lord. It's a real easy mode. Like, I played the first couple bosses with it just to check it out. It's a real easy mode, but it's fun as a really fun as like a victory lap.
Yeah. This game aesthetically is a triumph. This is going to be one of the first things that you notice is just the loving pixel art that is thrown in here. Grim and gory without being like super dour or like monotone. Yeah. This is still very colorful, right?
Very colorful. Yeah. And it does this. It just looks like a 8-bit game, you know, for the most part. And then when they show a portrait, they do really high detail things. Whenever that happens, it reminds me of Ren and Stimpy.
Yeah.
You know how they do those close-ups? Mm-hmm. And these are just to show their incredible monster designs. Like, if you're a fan of gigantic eyeballs and stomachs, you will like this game because roughly half the bosses have a big eyeball in their stomach.
Yeah. If you want a dick vagina to shoot fireballs at you, this is what you want.
Yes.
Yeah.
Incredible looking monsters. Like real Kingdom Death looking monsters. Gosh,
I love a beastie. And a critter.
Man, and just like an alt Lord Baby Suggs. Like there's a baby Suggs that you fight in this, the guy with the teeth on the bottom, big cartoon teeth in the bottom of his abdomen, floats around. Looks like a boglin. He's fucking incredible.
It's so good. Oh gosh. And it's very gory. You can take a prurient interest in this. I am not too proud for that. There's even a warning at the front that it's not for kids because pixel art games, you know, sometimes that's a bit of the connotation that they have.
Yeah. It's a jokey warning though, too. There's a joke in the thing. I love the gore in this. Mm-hmm. I have no shame.
The death animations are so numerous.
Yeah. Like a Mac Venture kind of thing, you know, except a graphic. It's great. I differ with you on this. I don't think the music in this is very good.
Oh, wow.
I don't remember any of it. I was expecting Castlevania style jams and I did not get that. Some of it's fine, you know, or like most of it, all of it's fine. None of it stood out as bad to me, but I, there's no bloody tears. There's no music. Like, it's not Shovel Knight. You know, I was expecting really, really, you know, top of the pops 8-bit music, and I didn't get that.
Yeah,
for me,
I enjoyed it. I thought it was really earwormy. You know, taste is going to vary.
Yeah, your mileage definitely may vary on that one, for sure.
Yeah. As we kind of alluded to earlier, Berserk Studio did continue adding to the game. They did the co-op mode. They also did this mode where you can play as the Stranger, i.e., Ash from Evil Dead. You know, kind of going right back into an Army of Darkness kind of situation.
And again, none of these they're not palette swap things at all. Like they do really cool gameplay things. Mm-hmm. The Ash mode, you give up your potion slot, which is huge, for a shotgun, you know, which is a great idea as a trade-off. Mm-hmm. Like in this medieval combat milieu, giving up a heal as an important verb, what is an offensive verb that could possibly equal that?
Yeah.
Well, it's a shotgun when you're fighting guys with teeth and claws and shit. Yeah. This developer, Berserk Studio, they're based out of Canada. Previously they had worked on a bunch of Flash games, so those are all lost to time.
Scoured, just completely scoured from history and our minds.
This was originally just going to be this weekend Flash project in 2011. We're riffing on Castlevania 2, but making a gorier Castlevania 2.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but the project just kept on growing in scope until they decided to kickstart it as a non-Flash game in 2015.
Yes.
Yeah. Yep.
They wanted to do this partly because Flash was going away. You know, smart. Mm-hmm. It was this, you know, they talked about their inspiration. Obviously, Zelda 2 and Castlevania 2. Big inspirations on this, but also heavy metal and historical accounts of medieval battles.
No.
Which, if you ever read any of those, it's not all fun and games.
No.
You know, there's a lot of sepsis going on. there's a lot of the inside poop ended mm-hmm. up on the outside through your belly and stuff.
Yeah. Ending up on the outside, but still the inside, you know, a lot of cavity insides. Yeah. A lot of cavity breaches, you know?
Yes. Yeah. It was a bad scene there. And this game, it's not like this game is like trying to sell, you know, it's not glory. You know, you're not like, you know, marveling at the brutality of war. It's just like, yeah, this would be bloody, but let's also above all, keep it super fun.
Yeah.
All the time.
Yeah. This got pretty good reviews, but it still kind of landed in the low to mid 80s. That is wild to me. I don't know if it's my particular taste.
Yeah. I thinking about this, I was talking about this in the Slack and talking about this with Weep, my friend, and they were saying how they were getting a little sick of 8-bit throwbacks mm-hmm. at the time, and how this, you know, like they thought they were done with them. Mm-hmm. And then this came along. I think probably that's probably a little universal. You know? Yeah. There were a lot of real mid-tier 8-bit throwbacks for a long time.
Yeah. Like,
you know, I feel like the 3DS came along and we just got flooded with these. Mm-hmm. Like there are mutant muds everywhere and they're all not very good. You know, they're fine, but it's not that exciting. Mm-hmm. So I wonder if your reviewers were just kind of sick of this thing.
Yeah, this there was some fatigue. Yeah.
A little fatigue, and maybe, you know, you never know with reviewers whether like they go through it, because if you just start this, it does seem a little bit like it's going to be one of those.
Yeah.
You know, you have to get kind of a little bit further into it to find like the craft and care mm-hmm. and detail. But it's like a Shovel Knight. It is a throwback game that pays a lot of attention to what was good about those original games.
Yeah.
So
I love it.
Yeah. Yeah. It's really good. I'm also think this game is underrated.
Yes.
So, yeah.
So let's get into it.
Mm-hmm. We start off with an introduction to see slides about Duke Elsador, returning home to the Duchy of Uppel, tired of the brutality of the Crusades.
Mm-hmm.
However, brutality is waiting at home because the Necronomicon got there. Uh-oh. Yeah. There goes the neighborhood.
Never good news brought there by someone named Robert.
Yeah. Hello.
It's a short instruction, short and sweet. We get right into it. We climb off of a boat. If you want to get an ending, you can keep trying to get back on the boat.
I love it so much.
The coward's path.
the sleepy path is my favorite of the fake out endings there. But yeah, you can do the coward's path and just leave and be like, fuck that noise. I love it. As soon as you get off the boat, a crucified man comes back to life, falls off the cross, and attacks you, giving you your first combat and kind of a little bit of the basic melee rhythm of this, mm-hmm. which is attacking and then jumping away before a counterattack.
Mm-hmm.
That is what you do for most of the bosses and most of the fights in this. There is that kind of stick and move rhythm to mm-hmm. this. After you fight him, you fight several more undead and these little roaches. In this tutorial area, doing some platforming here on the shores.
Yeah. Until you reach your first moral choice. There's get your first portrait of these guys. A twisted man is like, kill me. murder me.
And in a video game, you know, mm-hmm. your choice is kill him, help him. Right.
Yeah.
Video games teach us that help is good. You mm-hmm. know, and if you choose help, though, he turns into a big demon. You know, this is a morally good choice, but it makes the game harder. You can just kill him.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's starting to show that it's going to subvert some of those things.
Yeah.
You know, and it's teaching you again, that Old Testament morality of this game, which is, oh, he's infected. Fucking mm-hmm. kill him.
No.
There's no help.
No.
You know, let him die.
So,
yeah.
He is Payman.
He is Payman. He turns into Payman, who looks goddamn incredible. This gigantic spider grub thing with crucified bodies coming out of his back,
mm-hmm.
An exposed belly with his open rib cage, there. In general, he just kind of walks forward a couple steps and breathes fire really slowly.
Mm-hmm.
This is will fight true payment later.
Yes.
Yeah. This is easy payment just as a first boss.
Yeah. Yeah. But you're just going for the weak spot and then getting away before you can attack. Nothing. Yep. Nothing crazy. If you do this, if you kill Payman, a woman standing off of the edge of the screen will get a little exclamation mark and then run away. We will meet her later. And then after this, we find our first save point. These kind of shrines where you can spend your experience if you have enough and also save your game.
The image of Elsador looking upwards, like piously, that mm-hmm. comes when you save it is very funny.
Yeah.
He looks like such a goddamn dork. So we start heading down these cliffs and we're reduced to these eye enemies. These are kind of the equivalent of Medusa heads.
Mm-hmm.
You know, or what have you in this. There are blue ones that are very calm, move very slowly, and then red ones that will hone in on you. Yeah. And like a Castlevania, what you're being asked to do is these enemies can move on all axes, mm-hmm. Whereas you can only attack, you know, at the 90 degrees, and you can only jump to change this.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the way Castlevania deals with this is by giving you a bunch of sub items that go in different angles. Here, you at least initially, you have to jump and kind of figure out how to get these guys into crosshair.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Unless I was trying to clear out for combat, I would just do my best to get around them.
Yeah. Ordinarily, you can ignore them. They end up becoming an ad for a lot of the bosses.
Mm-hmm.
And they become kind of dangerous to ignore. No. But by then, you can usually one shot them.
Yeah.
You know, and get them right when they pop out.
Mm-hmm.
And we arrive in our hometown here, Darsov.
Yes. Here. Things aren't good. Yeah. It's under attack. The guards beg you for help. There are skeletons about, you get to see somebody get run through with a spear.
Yep.
You beat off this first attack and the guards welcome you home. However, the buildings are all locked, because it is nighttime.
Yes. They're like, hey, you know, welcome back, Lord, go to the cathedral. You know, yes. and check in, figure out what's going on. You go there and something attacks from the west. The screen shakes. All the guards rush in that direction. And you rush over there. And then a big pustule-covered ogre, this is called the Aberration, with a cleaver breaks through the gate. Yeah. This is a 2D Dark Souls boss, if I've ever seen one.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very similar. It's an escalation of the payment fight.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to have to get in close to hit him in the stomach, but then he's going to swing his axe very slowly, which you have to mm-hmm. Get out of the way.
Yes. Yeah. So. You know, just ramping things up a little bit slowly, you know, giving you another cool big sprite to hit mostly.
Mm-hmm.
After a few hits though, it runs away. You don't defeat it. And kind of the leader of the town here, Father Henry, comes and thanks you for saving the village, saying like, yeah, we're going to go out and hunt that thing tomorrow. You don't want it coming back.
Night passes and now the buildings in the town are unlocked, you know, so we can go and check out the citizens here. We meet a guy named Handsome Hans.
Mm-hmm.
Handsome Hans, who wants to join this exclusive secret organization. He says, hey, meet me at Tohan Passage. Mm-hmm. We don't know what that is yet, but we know there's a passage in play. We're coming.
Right. There's a woman named Genevieve who wants me to find her husband who went missing up at Kajanto Peak. Mm-hmm. This is a place we're not going to get to quite yet. We're getting like it's a bunch of side quests, some of which are not going to pay off until like way later in the game.
Yeah. Game has a side quest structure, mm-hmm. a reason to go somewhere, have a brief and fun little encounter, like usually a bespoke boss,
mm-hmm.
And then head back in order to get a reward. The game's economy is built around you doing these.
Mm-hmm.
I can't imagine ignoring them and still kind of being on the curve.
Yeah.
You know, but it's okay because you want to do them because you're here to fight cool bosses.
Yes.
Stuff.
Yeah. There's an old woman named Josephine who asked us to defeat the skeleton who was haunting her husband's grave over by the docks to the east. I hate this thing. Yeah. I don't hate this. Just like, oh, the skeleton, but death
haunting
me.
The grave. I was really thinking of Lost Skeleton and Cadaver thing with that. Like it just kind of floating around. Instead, it is a big skeleton that looks very similar to a big skeleton you fight in Shovel Knight.
Mm-hmm.
In this cave to the east. It's real simple. Real simple fight. He does a slow sword attack. He also does a ground pound that sends out waves. You mm-hmm. know, real 8-bit dot enemy pattern.
Yeah.
You know, things, but it's a good fun fight. Mm-hmm. And when you get back, she lets you sleep at the inn.
Yeah.
That is your reward. It will change the day night state. This is where you can get the sleepy ending. If you keep going to sleep over and over, they'll start commenting on it. Like you wake up and you're like, I'm going back to bed. And they'll be like, well, you just slept, sir. You know, if you keep doing it, you get the ending where you just sleep through the whole Necronomicon thing. And it shows a little homage to the Mario 2, sleepy Mario. It's really cute.
The Path of the Drowsy is what that ending is called. I got
the Path of the Drowsy by playing the nap card. You can avert this entire thing.
Roll credits.
I love it. Love it. Love
it. Oh, man. There's a barracks to the west of town. The sergeant there will ask you to defeat these monsters who are lurking in a barn at his family's home past Valeshire Keep. So it's kind of the next main area we're going to go to, but we can talk about how this resolves. This barn is basically just an arena for a boss fight against the Necro. Which is this like a lich, like an undead necromancer kind of guy who summons these other undead and teleports around. It's not Authority the Royal Rat, but the other one. Yeah.
Yeah. Authority the Royal Rat is the one you're thinking of.
Is
you're thinking of Royal Rat Vanguard.
Yes.
Yeah.
Is the big one.
The and if you go here without any combat upgrades, this can actually be a little bit tough.
Yeah.
Weirdly, like this was before I was on top of the curve, I guess.
Yeah.
So this was, it was a little bit tough for me.
He spams teleport. Yeah.
Yeah. A lot. Another sergeant there asks you to defeat some bandits outside of Darsov at the Valeshire Bridge. You go there and we find the bandit menacing an old man named Egbert. Mm-hmm. He offers you 100 gold to let him go, which is a lot of money at this point. But we fought and killed him because we're on the good path. If you don't, if you take that negative path, this is one of the first things you can do to start getting on the cultist ending.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Egbert will say like, oh, I'm going to set up this water wheel, you know, the shop down at the water wheel. I think he sells like a potion bottle or something like that.
It's a spell. It's one of the early spells you can get.
Gotcha. Yeah. Gotcha. Like that was probably the shield one, maybe.
Yes.
Possibly.
Yeah, it's an early spell.
Yeah. So Valeshire is the place where they're going to be going to hunt that guy. So we head down there. It's like to the left of Darsov and then down. It's a very vertical map. And we reach this new area that's like mostly green fields, but there are, you know, crucifixes up still. Bad stuff happens. We got skeletons here and they got axes and they will chop with them, but also do the Castlevania arc throw with them.
Yes. I love using our kind of shared 8-bit like gaming vocabulary, you know, as a libretto like that. Like, I just know how an axe is going to move.
Yep.
You know, and this isn't the only game that does it. It's the whole point of Vampire Survivors, right?
Yeah.
You know, but I'm just like, I know how these things work because I speak this language.
Yeah.
You know, it's neat.
It's kind of Castlevania's legacy.
Yeah. Yeah. Weirdly, it's that in the pachinko machine. Yeah, it's that in a slot machine.
Like a fool, I said gambling could never be horny.
Yes. When I was in Vegas, I couldn't find one Konami slot machine. I had a big plan to have Liv videotape me going through a Silent Hill slot machine and then send it to you as Silent Hill longplay.mpeg. New Silent Hill game long play leak dot mpeg to you, and then it just me playing that slot machine, but we couldn't find one.
I would have appreciated that. I appreciate the thought, thank you.
It was I just couldn't find it. We went to many casinos too. They didn't even have it in Circus.
What?
The gross casino, they didn't have it. The kids run down casino, child gambling casino. It doesn't happen. It might happen here. It happens later. I just want to make sure I don't forget it. Sometimes when you go into these scenes with skeletons, they're already fighting troops and you get to see them execute them. Mm-hmm. And it's very pleasingly violent.
Yeah.
And you can save them. If you're quick enough, you can save your guys. It doesn't do anything, but it's a fun Easter egg.
I love it. Most of them will say like, wow, you saved me. You're not like everybody says.
Yeah.
It's like, what? People are talking shit. Come on.
If you come here at night, we get these fast moving banshees. They just kind of rush you down. They split into this big bloody mess. If you kill them, it's beautiful.
Like ghosts do.
like ghosts do. You head down past this locked Valeshire keep here, where this is where we're coming here later, and reach a this dead field where there are all these bodies up on spikes here.
Yeah.
And Father Henry is here with some soldiers. They've tracked down the beast.
Yes. So we follow them out to the outside of Erzo Citadel, which is going to be our final final dungeon for the game. We fight the aberration again. Basically the same fight, but we're able to fight them all the way this time. You know, and falls apart into purple entrails. Just nothing but intestines in there.
One of the things that I like about this as well is when you start out, you're fighting with troops.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this game doesn't. It's not like this whole land was like, oh, the Necronomicon's about. We're going to wait for one guy to fight everything.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there are people who are going to fight with you. They're not very good at it, but they will do damage.
Yeah.
You know, they'll get killed. It just makes it feel like a battle,
mm-hmm.
you know, as opposed to a boss fight.
Yeah. And that is way more effective at making you feel like a badass than just, oh, you go do it alone. It's like, you know, many, many tried and failed and you were the only one with the metal to do it.
Yeah. And it gives you a motivation. You can save, you're seeing the stakes. Like mm-hmm. they're just little pixel guys.
Yeah.
You know, but there's not like an implied, the people in villages in Zelda 2 and Castlevania 2 are siloed. Mm-hmm. Here they're going out and joining the fight and you see them die, you know, so it gives a sense of the stakes, the degree that you can like kind of buy in. Afterwards, after you beat them, Father Henry says, hey, this citadel radiates dark magic, you know, and there's a seal on it. We can't get inside. There are these stones that are blocking it, that we need to go fight four bosses and four sub dungeons, mm-hmm. To open the seal.
Sorry, I wrote the wrong number. It's five.
Yeah. I thought so. I just wasn't sure, but yeah, mm-hmm. five dungeons to get in.
Yeah. And they gave us our key to the first one, Valeshire Keep, which we passed on the way here. That is where the first of these stones are kept, you know, just used to be a place, you know, a fortress, but, all the evil arrived and chased us out. So we got to go there. Yep. And this brings us to our first dungeon, Valeshire Keep. It's its own map. It's full of traps. We have dropping spikes. We have arrow traps, from below and from the walls. These arrow traps are really confounding and they're going to stick with us the entire game and escalate wildly.
Yes. Just use a shield dummy is what they're saying.
Like, it's not that simple though, because there's one that fires at chest level in a lot of these. And then there's one that fires at ankle level. So
yeah, you have to duck.
Use a shield, but duck. Yes.
Yeah. It's teaching you to think defensively, I think.
Yeah.
You know, we talked about the shield spell briefly that you get from the guy, similar to Zelda 2. This just makes you take less damage in general. Real good, at least at first.
Yeah.
You know, as a thing. And this is setting up kind of the formula to these dungeons, which is you go off the critical path to grab a key. And then go to the critical path using it. So first we had left, and there's a skeleton commander here, like a tough skeleton guy with a flaming sword and a shield. We need to attack when he winds up his attack.
Yeah.
So if otherwise he just has his shield up, but as he's about to attack, you can attack him and then get out of the way.
That flaming sword is no joke. We do not have a lot of health yet. And this was the thing that kept fucking me up, that made me switch to the casual restart. I was like, yeah, if I can help this, I'm going to help it.
Yeah. It's the game's got a weird difficulty curve where it is hardest in the beginning, by far, you know, at least on casual restart. Like eventually you're so resourced for heals, and stuff near the end game that like, it was pretty rare that I died. In this, early on though, it's much tougher.
Yeah.
So, after we beat him, we get the key, and then we can, go this path beyond this locked door that we can go to and it branches. This is setting up again, the structure of these dungeons where after you use the key, there's one path usually that will take you to a spell and one path that will take you to a boss. This is a minor nitpick I have with the game. This spell is necessary, but not all spells. Are necessary, and I didn't get one of the spells, the one that allows you to shoot beams.
Oh, that one's important. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I was A-okay, but I didn't get it because it was in a dungeon and I just missed it. And I was like, I don't remember where that's at. I don't want to go back.
Yeah.
But this one you actually need the Thunderstorm spellbook, which is an AoE for all enemies on the screen, kind of like a smart bomb kind of thing.
Yeah. This is necessary because it will open up a later dungeon yes. in a fun puzzle. The innermost chamber is where we get our boss here, you know, huge enemy, this, this big fat cyclops, in a red hood with a gaping hole in its stomach, like a, I don't know, like an abscess or something. And, two big claws for hands. This is Mahalman.
Yeah. We talk about these guys being, you know, gory, but colorful. Mm-hmm. This guy's exceedingly colorful.
Yeah.
Like his claws and the trim on his uniform are either like bright blue or purple.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he has like he's very, very colorful and beautiful. Yeah. I love him. He teleports between the edges of the screen, firing these kind of blue fireballs and taking swipes.
Yeah.
He's tall. So in order to get to his weak point, his head, you either have to jump or get on one of these platforms there. And he can spit fireballs on these platforms.
Yes.
Here. So it's dangerous to just hang out on them.
Yeah. You're trying to be evasive on these two levels. This is not really testing. Like it's not a lock for which the Thunderbolt spell is a key, you know,
not
like
at all.
That's not really going to happen. All of these bosses are tests of combat metal. Not, do you understand the way these, the reward here works?
Yeah. Exactly. It's not like traditional Zelda. You know, things. It's also, they're all very pattern based. Mm-hmm. This is very much a no hit run is very possible game. You know, once you know the patterns, it becomes, I had that Dark Souls feeling of like, oh, I just know what to do now.
Oh yeah.
I'm getting hit as optional.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. After he dies, he spawns a red orb. And once you smash the orb, it deactivates one of the seals on the citadel door, and you get this flash of this giant beast thing on the screen. very similar to the Ganon silhouette from Zelda 2. This is just showing that we're getting closer to unsealing the final Urzo Keep.
Right. So we return to Father Henry. Father Henry back at Darsov will be a will feed us hints about where to go. Usually what'll happen is you get a movement ability and I'm like, oh, I remember where those blocks blocked me before. Okay. Here though, he tells you like, hey, there's this necropolis beneath Combleton Cemetery. Maybe head that direction.
Yep. This is the bottom left of the map. You head down there. And this is like a dead and dying region of the cemetery.
Mm-hmm. You
know? When we go down here, we see this very evil looking man named Robert, reading to his red robed cultist. This is the guy who brought the Necronomicon back, Robert. Yeah. And one of the cultists says, hey, do you want to help destroy Father Henry's holy book?
Yeah.
Whenever they want you to do an evil thing, they just say like, hey, do you want to do this horrible thing? Like, what if we flooded the town? Would that be cool? It's very direct, you know?
I like that. I said no because I was going for, I didn't get the best ending, but I got at least the good ending, you know? Mm-hmm. And he's like, oh, well, your loss.
Yep. It just, no problem. I love it. And you go past him to this alchemist who's like, yeah, the cultists are making problems. They're just hanging out. So he's like, can you get them to leave? You know?
Loitering squad.
So you go and rouse loiter squad. You know, you go and go to send them away. Robert says, hey, listen, we just need to rest for the night. You know, would you like to stay? But you can also expel them by force.
Yeah.
And actually boot them out, which is a moral choice. I got to play this in the evil version because in the evil version, you legit like lay siege to towns and all your towns are these little, cultist layers.
Yeah. You get to ally with an arsonist.
Yeah. 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 Once you do this, so you choose not to, and the alchemist will teach you the heal spell. And this introduces the good and evil kind of dichotomy of spells. Mm-hmm. If you go the evil path in this, instead of heal, you get a drain life.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you get an evil version of that. There.
Yeah. Yeah. The path to the necropolis is, you know, more of this challenging platforming along scaffolding, but we also get these dropping spike platforms on chains.
Yes.
Something that I like is the lead up to every dungeon introduces an element that is relied upon heavily in the dungeon itself.
Mm-hmm.
So like the class is the way there and then the dungeon itself is the exam.
Yeah. Here with the dropping spike things and with the water wheels, stuff like that. This is also where I make the argument for going into casual restarts. when you're doing these platforming challenges. I don't really know what is added by just having to go and walk here again.
Yeah.
It adds something for somebody, but I don't understand what is good about that.
Yeah.
So we get forward to Combleton Necropolis here. This is all about spike platforms. Some of them are actually over lava, so the platforming has more consequence.
Yeah.
On classic restart, falling in a liquid will kill you. On this version, on casual restart, you'll respawn, but you'll take a good amount of damage.
Yes. Which is fine, because that restart is enough of a punishment.
Yeah, I think so. You know, you're using your resources. Mm-hmm. You know, it took an Estus.
Yeah. So there are skeleton enemies here. Some of them have horned heads, and they have an array of weapons that all function pretty differently. You know, some of them are throwing spears. Some of them have axes. There's a good variety introduced here.
Yes. The main level of this is widely separated by wings. We got east and west. There are keys at both far ends of this one. It's a two key dungeon. Mm-hmm. One key is guarded by a new enemy called the Dead Knight. A skeleton with a shield and a flaming sword, not like the last one. That was a skeleton with a shield and a flaming sword. Does a lot of damage. This guy, he's tough. And the treasure that we get here is the skill called Precision Strike, which allows us to shatter destructible blocks and parry, send projectiles back at enemies by hitting them.
Yeah. As far as I know, there's only one boss that relies on this. As kind of its gimmick. It is just a useful thing that sometimes I would forget was available to me until I attacked at the right time and then did the parry. Yeah.
It's a much more important part of other characters and weapon sets that you can use with Sordador. When you do not have the shield, use this a lot more. And then there's like the guy who uses the axe. Axidor has the Castlevania delay much more pronounced, but swings in a wide arc. So if you duck down, you'll hit all around you, which makes you into kind of a little parry reflection machine.
Nice.
And this.
Yeah. The boss here is Calamon. This is, it's a big guy with a, he has an actual head. There's a helmet up there, but the primary face is his torso. So instead of nipples, he has these big goofy eyes. And his gut, it has this ring of teeth making a big mouth where his intestines are dangling out. And he moves by principle of floating. So he's got these little useless legs just kind of dangling there.
This is the exceedingly baby Suggs. Yeah. There's one that's a little bit more baby Suggs.
What's this one, baby, but this Suggs?
Very baby Suggs? Baby Suggs is that it's from Toni Morrison's The Beloved.
Okay.
It's a character whose name is Baby Suggs for some reason. It's a very serious novel. But my friend Andrew, when he was in class, somebody in his class, every time the teacher said Baby Suggs, went, Baby Suggs.
Okay.
And it just kind of, if I see like a total tuna can, you know, like a little chode looking at me like this, a 1x2, I think of Baby Suggs.
Okay.
It's worked its way into my vocabulary entirely in a way that's very warm and respectful to The Beloved by Toni Morrison. So just imagine like a little guy, like a little wide, a little wider, wide as he is tall. Baby Suggs.
Well, tuna can. Yeah,
total tuna can. This guy's a total tuna can.
These platforms over magma, and they're dropping spike traps. He's floating toward you. There are skeletons spawning. He does not necessarily attack himself. This is more him forcing you to move by dangling his intestines at you and hoping these other threats will get you.
Yeah. Unlike most bosses, he has a second phase. After you fight him enough, he'll start floating towards you.
Yeah.
Here, and you have to worry about the angle that he comes. After you eventually beat him, you get this death animation, or if you die to him, where he reels you in and his stomach teeth
eat you. Just big chomp. You know, we destroy the orb, we get the other seal broken, and now we have Precision Strike, which will open up some different places for us. We are able to go to this walled off house in Valeshire. There's this woman who asks us, like, hey, I've got this horrible thing in my basement. Can you defeat it? And you can go down there and fight Mammon. This is the boss that will test your parrying. It's like this big polyp growth thing on the far right wall, separated from you by a field of spikes.
Yeah. You cannot get over to him. You have to reflect his things back at him.
Yes.
Yeah. But it, you know, and it's a little bit odd to put the tutorial for this thing on off the beaten path, but they do put it right after you get it.
Yes.
You know, so you can go here and check it out. What you end up getting for this is the guided strike skill, which is this AOE attack, the ground pound that'll do damage below you, which ends up being really handy. If you're above a ledge and there's an enemy just walking back and forth on the ledge below you, you don't have a lot of options to hit them. This takes care of that.
Yeah. Pretty powerful. Ended up being a way that I dealt with a lot of threats.
Yep.
Yeah.
Now that we have this precision strike and we can break bricks, we can get into the Arcos Underpass, underground road that leads to the town of Arcos.
Mm-hmm. Kind of headed into like underground water zone, you know, kind of like new Londo kind of deal. Wooden structures are built up. It's like docks over water far below. And on the bridge leading into the city, we meet the brewmaster of Arcos. I says like, "Hey, wheel of my wagon broke. Can you help me get back into town? You know, need to get some stuff to the inn." And this is where some chickens come home to roost. If we rousted those loiterers, if we told those cultists to scram up in Valeshire, then they're going to come down here and kill this guy and then attack.
Yep. Yep. He will die. Sad. You will fight them and get a bunch of money. It's great. Yeah.
And I think this denies you a potion vendor in this town.
Yeah. 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 It has a real mechanical consequence to it.
Yeah.
The other mechanical consequence comes from where this town is situated. It is a town that is in the shadow of an underground dam, and it's on stilts. It's built above water here. As we explore it, there's a blacksmith here that sells better armor, and an upgraded mace, as well as a second potion bottle. You always want to buy these as soon as you can. The magic shop sells the time warp spell, which allows you to change day to night, which again, very useful there. Around this time, I was desperate for a teleportation spell. Go back for a quest. I had to look up where to get that, but you can get it around now. It's a side thing.
I thought you needed the upward attack
do that.
It's nearby, but you've got to be able to do the double jump thing.
There we go. Yeah. Very useful. I was like, I know there's going to be a fast travel somewhere in this game.
Yeah.
We're introduced to another, the corruption of this. There's this guy who can barely talk. His name is Simon Johns. He's kind of mumbling and he says, "Destroy the dam." He's the town. do you want to do an evil thing? You say no. And you fight a bunch of specters.
Right. There. You know, or you can agree and wipe out the lower half of the town by doing that.
Yeah. It denies you some resources. The people don't die. They all just go up to the top of the town.
And they're real mad at whoever did that.
Yeah. Like, I love that you destroy the dam by attacking it. I came to that wall and I hit it and it shuddered. And I was like, oh, shit. And then I laughed. Yeah, it's great.
There's a woman named Lillian in a house. This is the woman who saw us destroy Payman earlier on. Saying like, "Hey, I need you to finish the job. Whatever had haunted him or possessed him is still around. There's a wizard named Alan up at Catsky, who will tell you how to do it. You can't reach them." And Alan is my wizard. Alan. That's a backer name thing.
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah.
Who knows?
Or it could be an homage. Some of the NPCs have weird names in those NES games. We can't reach that town yet, but it's worth talking about this resolution. Alan will teach you the magic words, and you go back to where you fought Payman, you get the reprise with kind of the full version of Payman on its home turf, inside this big chamber full of webbed up skulls and big old, spider food sleeping bags hanging from the ceiling. Yep.
It's a very similar rematch, except he has spider powers now. Mm-hmm. He'll climb up on the ceiling and drop down on you.
Yeah.
Very similar to a specific DuckTales boss. Yeah. Which one, excuse me. But and you do this quest, you get some money. Mm-hmm. The sergeant at the barracks here wants you to find his friend Willard, who did not come back from patrol. And he says, bring a potion just in case.
Yeah.
There.
Pretty simple. So, you just find him wounded partway toward the dungeon and then send him back.
Yeah. Yep. Takes a potion to get him back. Yeah. The captain then asks you to investigate a criminal hideout nearby. Handsome Hans in Darsov might know the password. And when we head there, we find the cult is attacking Hans for squealing the password.
Yeah, he was the guy who was talking about wanting to join the secret society, and it was a no Hans club.
He got what he wished for.
Joined
it with prejudice.
Yeah,
the password is Book of Truth.
Yes, and this hideout is a unassuming little building in the Tohan Passage, kind of above Arcos. And we speak the password and get inside, and we learn that Robert's cultists are the ones who summon the demons at Urzon. Like, yeah, things got kind of out of hand at Urzon, but we got a handle on it now.
We control the demons. Mm-hmm. You report back to the captain, and he says they'll keep the cultist under close watch. They're going to, they're the main villains of the game. This is the faction you join in the evil playthrough.
Right. Yeah. So beyond Arcos is the Stormheim Shore. We're still in kind of these underground caverns here. But we're at water level, and we get our new platforming complication. These water wheels. Feels like a Castlevania 4 kind of thing. They rotate, and they will slowly move you over as you are standing on them, possibly dumping you into the water where you will die.
A clock tower thing a little bit.
Oh yeah.
And they move at different speeds. So it's all about managing momentum. Mm-hmm. If one of them is moving clockwise, it's going to toss you really far. You need to be careful not to overshoot your jump, and then vice versa. Getting enough momentum on one that's going counterclockwise can be difficult. I did not find these actually that tricky. Personally, my understanding is this is a sticking point for folk, but it didn't find my weakness.
Yeah.
But also, again, I was on casual mode at this point. Mm-hmm. So if I fell in the water, it was no big deal.
Yeah. Yeah. It was just a mild restart.
Yep. We find Wilfred, the sergeant's friend, given the potion, and eventually reach the dam, which is near the inn. This is where I hit it and freaked out, then went back into the inn. And the people in the inn talk about seeing a castle in the ocean during a storm. This is a puzzle. Mm-hmm. You get to use the thunderstorm spell by the water to make the palace rise.
Yeah. This is a good version of Castlevania 2 shit.
Yes. I don't know if you've got these in the notes, but I'm going to call them both out. There's two funny Castlevania meta jokes that would be awful webcomics, but are funny in a video game.
Go ahead and do that.
One, you can find, I think in this dungeon, you can find some wall meat. Some wall turkey, and you just get a cutscene. Did you not find the wall turkey?
No, I did not find the wall turkey.
You find the wall turkey, and then you walk into it to eat it, and then you get a cutscene, like a animated blow up image of your character puking, and just like eating food that was in the wall. Why? Mm-hmm. And then to the left of the graveyard, there's a Deborah Cliff from Castlevania 2. So if you kneel on it the way you would in Castlevania 2, lightning just strikes you and you die. and you get a little explanation that's like, how would you know that, kneeling at this specific spot would cause a storm to come and kill you? I love that it uses the visual. Like, I just recognize the geometry. Mm-hmm. of that Castlevania 2 place, because I played that game a million times as a kid. So I was like, I'm gonna kneel here. I'm tricking the game. and the game got me. I laughed out loud. It was great.
It's made me very happy. It's rewarding your knowledge of the game with the jokes. Yeah.
And low consequence jokes. It didn't feel like a gotcha. It just felt like I felt in on the joke with my buddies, the developers.
Very good. So we get raise this castle, and we get into Stormheim itself. Lots of water platforming here. We get some new enemies, specifically these deep ones that are the primary thing that they do. They hop out of the water, so you don't always see them coming, and they move very erratically. They hop around, which is an issue. Hate these guys. A little bit easier to deal with are these Eye Lords, these massive skulls that spawn unending red eyes to attack you. So the angry ones.
Mm-hmm. I really like these guys from a game design perspective, how they interface with platforming challenges, because they put them further away from you, but they're going to keep spawning eyes. So you are incentivized to do the platforming challenge as quickly as possible.
Mm-hmm.
Before you get overwhelmed to like turn off the spigot.
Other
things.
Otherwise you're going to pile up. Yeah.
So it's not so much about these, you know, if you're fighting one of these things on a plat plane, it's nothing. You know, they are just there to incentivize and complicate platforming.
Mm-hmm.
Reaches narrow platforms, and the boss appears. This is Leviathan here. You have the notes that he looks like a penis man. Can you elaborate on that?
It's got a big old head. Looks kind of like a, I don't know. It is kind of torpedo-shaped kind of looking guy. I don't know.
Interesting.
Yeah. That's all I got. I don't know.
Oh, you put this pen here just so I think it was a dick? Cute.
I bet you, Mac. Very devious. You put that here. Very devious. God, every one of these things look like some kind of sexual organ, dude.
I don't think so. I didn't think call like a baby Suggs. You got to get Suggs filled, and then every dick turns into a Suggs.
Yeah.
Language is fun. That's not a sentence that made any sense. Mm-hmm. He looks like a squid to me. Like he's got a squid shape. Mm-hmm. And this guy, you're on a platform. He swims underneath the platform, popping up on either end, trying to swipe you with his tentacles. He'll rise up and do one of two fire attacks, either a short range burst or a beam blast that you have to duck. No. And then he'll send his little tentacles back and forth on you to jump. This guy is really no big deal. Mm-hmm. Later they complicate this guy.
Yeah. Yeah. Your reward is a very important skill. This thing called Sky Call. This is kind of the double jump that you get. By attacking while pressing up, you do kind of this sky attack. You launch straight upward. You can do this even in the air.
Yeah, this is functions as your double jump. Mm-hmm. Here. This is what I was thinking about. This is when you can get the teleport.
Yes.
After the fight, Wilfred will have killed Philippe in the Arcos Inn.
Yeah.
Cutting off this cultist quest line. So Wilfred, the guy we saved, went and killed this guy who tricked him.
We did too many good things.
Yeah. We're locked on a path, I believe. There is a Shade of Grey redemption ending. Mm-hmm. Which seems like the hardest one to get, where you start evil and then turn good. Mm-hmm. I don't know the specific ins and outs of that.
Same.
So, back in Arcos, the villagers are gathered around a cage. Somebody has turned into a demon. And they captured him, and they're trying to figure out what to do with him.
Right. Here. The choice is to either burn it alive or to try to reason with it.
That's so funny. And I chose reason because I'm still kind of, I haven't picked up on the morality of this game yet.
Uh-huh.
Exactly. As soon as you try to reason with it, it escapes and just kills a woman and just runs away.
It's the best joke in the game. It's really good. I guess I need to work on my conversation skills.
When I was trying to figure out what stopped me from getting the future ending, if you burn this alive, that is one of the things that contributes to your demonology score, which is kind of like your monster manual thing, your bestiary. Since I chose reason with, I didn't get this, and that was at least one of the points, if not the only point, that was low on getting that ending.
No. So,
yeah, burning it alive is the better choice because it increases your bestiary.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And this is where you get to. You can get up to that house in the Arcos underpass where you can buy the very useful teleport skill. This lets you warp between shrines that you have been to. Very important for finishing up and doing quests more efficiently.
Especially for the ultimate end, which has you sweeping a bunch of cultist hideouts at the end. Now that we have the Sky Call, we can climb up Tohan Passage and reach Darsov again, and head to the east from there.
Yeah.
At the easternmost part of this path, there's this thing called the Backer Mausoleum. You know, I'm not about to read backer names, but you can go to the end of it to get to the game wizard.
Yeah. Finding this unlocks it, so you can just use it at the shrine, which is good.
Yep.
This even has the Game Genie brand colors on it.
Yeah.
The Galoob Game Genie. Do we need to describe, if people are listening to this episode or are familiar with the old games, we do not need to describe what a Game Genie is, right?
I don't know. Like, they're probably their kids. People have lived and died since the day since the Game Genie's reign was over. This was a thing you would plug into an NES cart into, and then plug this thing into your NES. It was like middleware, and it allowed you to basically hex edit your games. You'd put in certain codes through this like beautiful interface and give yourself cheats, you know, obviously, but you could also tweak an amazing number of things. This was a lot of people's introduction to programming and ROM hacking. We should do a topics episode on the Game Genie and cheat devices. I'm sure there's a cool history there. And I know that Nintendo, you know, there were legal things and stuff. Like, I think that's a good idea.
Yeah.
The Game Genie's neat.
Yeah. But the Game Genie gave way to the Game Shark, the Action Replay. Like, this was a thing for quite a long time, actually. Like, I don't know if there was ever one for the 360 and PS3 generation, but there absolutely were Action Replays for a PS2.
I think that's when they died. And it's actually a pretty big bummer that, you know, on PS3 and up, there's not an option for this kind of thing, as far as I can tell.
Yeah.
It was a huge part of gaming culture. Like, owning a Game Genie was great. Having that book. Game Genie codes, video game magazines would print new codes for things. I had friends who would come up with their own codes, you know, and then we would trade them. Yeah. Like, hey, try this Game Genie code. And then, like, you have moon gravity, shit like that. it was pretty cool.
I mean, it was one of my first uses for the internet, like a big section on, you know, it used, you know, GameFAQs used to be Game Sages, right? Game Sages, you know, one of the major kind of places you would go on there was the Game Genie, Game Shark kind of area where people would be sharing these things.
Yeah. Game used to be much more of a modifier for different jobs and animals. like, you could be a Game Sage, a Game Wizard, a Game Genie, or a Game Shark. Back in the day. Choose your class.
Yes.
You want to unlock this, though, if you want to fuck around with that stuff. There's a man named Zeb who you'll run into nearby. He says he's cursed, held in sway by the moon, giving us a hint to come back at night, where he turns into a werewolf. This is a pretty easy fight. He's aggressive. He jumps a lot, but he's, you know, he's not tough.
Yeah. Yeah. He will thank you with his dying breath and then open the path forward, kind of destroying this little wall that's capping off the path downward. There's a cathedral down here where you find George, or not George, Gregor. He's a penitent, flagellating himself under this crucified skeleton with a crown. Nothing to do here, except when you return to Darsov, we're going to need him real quick because, we've got a problem. Somebody is, somebody is possessed.
He's also the guy who you need for the good ending.
Yes.
If you go and get the Necronomicon. In Darsov, we mentioned someone's possessed. Here, Gregor rushes to us, says something terrible is happening. Or not Gregor, the guy, Henry.
Different guy. Yeah.
Sorry. So we go to the monk's bunks and find one of them floating in the bed in this pink haze of clouds. He's being possessed, and we have to break the demon's hold on him. So the way we do this is we go talk to Gregor the penitent back at the Darsov Cathedral, and he can do an exorcism there. You can also just kill him is an option with the black and white morality of this game. The exorcism, he says he was dreaming of this powerful demon named Azazel. And Gregor will talk to him about the Necronomicon.
Yes. Yeah. Saying like, hey, you know, if you want to know more about this, if you progress your demonology, I can tell you what's up. If you get it up high enough, you can be warped to the future to fight the techno-organic demon called Azazel to get an ending. Yeah.
Yeah. One of the, that's the thing that I missed out on. I still did the Necronomicon cult roundup.
Gotcha.
Get the second ending.
I did not do
true
that.
Boss or whatever. Yeah. Gotcha.
You got Baphomet, not just Belphegor.
Yes. Yeah, I fought Baphomet. So now that we have the Sky Call, we can go back to that tutorial area and check out some stuff. There's a man there who asks you to help him burn the village to the ground. Hey, do a sin. And you can be like, yeah, no.
Yeah. He doesn't attack you or anything. It's just, you know, just whatever. It's an option. I think this quest is called the Master Arsonist or something like that. You always want to apprentice with the best, you know?
Yes. if you say no, you fight the Faceless One.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
So he doesn't attack you. He turns into the Faceless One.
Yeah.
Attacks you.
This shrouded ghost looking guy with Hulk hands. He's got two big green hands.
He's got, yeah, two floating hands that are phenomenal with him.
Yeah.
He looks like, other than that, he looks like a wizard, you know, like a cultist wizard.
Yeah.
He floats around. I had done this later. So I came back here and did the rite after I'd already gone up to Katsuki. So I had the summon spell where I have the doves, which makes very short work of this guy because his gimmick is staying out of your reach.
Oh, yeah.
The doves will just take out his hands basically instantly. Mm-hmm. And then he comes down to be hit with the mace.
Nice. So we head up. We can go above Darsov to get to Katsuki, high in the mountains there. This is the one town with the day and night cycle where it reflects. They hide in this mausoleum at night because the monsters are coming to try and get their relic. You know, special skull that they keep under glass.
Yep. That is keeping the village safe. The wizard store here sells you the familiar spell, which summons a crow, which will aid in combat and hit distant switches. This was always on my bar. Mm-hmm. I use this for every boss. Eventually this gets upgraded to summon two doves. Mm-hmm. If you're on the good path, and it's very powerful. I can't imagine not using it. But it's a cool thing in that it's both a combat utility and a key.
Yes.
Hitting those distant switches, but also, being in fight. And that's, you know, keys are boring. Mm-hmm. See Ender Lilies, where eventually you get a summon that's just a guy with a key. That's not that exciting. At least let your things do two things.
Mm-hmm.
You know, let your keys do multiple things if you can.
Yeah, effectively, even.
Yeah. There's a man in this village named Michael who begs for help. He can't sleep. He needs an elixir to open his dreams. We get the elixir from this other mountain village, which we have to it's kind of tricky to get to that. The witch who sells the potions.
Yeah.
There on the left. I don't know how she goes and gets groceries. Like she has a house that's just on a freestanding cliff.
Yeah.
That you have to get to.
It's tricky with a sky call, but once you get the horizontal double jump, then it's super easy. Yeah.
Yeah.
So maybe she has that. I don't know.
I'm not sure. It's kind of there's not a save point outside of her house. So you can't teleport to it to refill on potions, which I found a little bit irritating.
Yeah.
Not a huge deal, but, once we get this, when we go back to Michael, we can go into his dreams, his Geiger-esque dream world.
Yeah. Full of these xenomorph enemies that will attack you with their claws, their scythe-like claws.
Yeah.
You know, here in this late game Contra level that we're in. The boss here is Crocel, kind of a feminine frog demon who looks and acts kind of like Paimon from earlier. Primarily existing to spawn bugs from her abdomen to come and attack you. She is only vulnerable when this big eye erupts from her mouth. We're getting into kind of a valley of not a valley, that implies quality. We're getting into a run of enemies that just vomit eyes out of their mouth.
There are a lot of and have a mouth for a stomach, vomit eyes out of their mouth. This one is great because it is explicitly giving birth. You know, a little bit. So like things are coming out of this you know, Chrissy. These little babies. And after you kill her, her Chrissy explodes, showering you in gore.
Yeah.
It's great.
Mm-hmm.
There's a woman named Caroline who's there who asks you to clear her family home on Mount Casca. It has a skeleton infestation.
Yeah.
So you have to go there. I love this.
T- to get there, funny. You have to go along this path. You need to have the familiar spell to extend this bridge. And you get in there, and there's this tiny little skeleton guy named Remus, who speaks mm-hmm. very politely. Oh, they say that I'm hurting people. How ridiculous. You know,
yes.
What an absurdity. And we get the option to either slay or spare. I don't know what happens if you spare, but
I don't. I'm sure he goes back and kills her. It is an old Testament game. Like, it's not, do not give the benefit of the doubt. You know, you have learned, spent enough time figuring out the steez of this. Yeah. You slay him. He is a skeleton. After you slay him, a bigger skeleton walks in and lights the house on fire.
My little buddy, no.
Yeah, I love it. So you get like a little escape sequence. Mm-hmm. That's really cool. Like, that's a weird thing to do in this engine.
Yeah.
After you get out, go back to the village, get your reward. You can stop by the mayor's office and find the villagers asking him, you know, to help with the monster problem. And he is this crooked bureaucrat. He's crooked, lazy, and he's not going to do it. He has a thug who hangs out with him.
Just a goon. Hired goons.
All-purpose goon.
The sergeant at the barracks related to this, you don't know that immediately, but you're going to find out, will say like, hey, we know about this plan. Some cultists are going to, go after the relic. They're going to come during the day when everybody's not in there. Can you help me defend it? So you go there during the day and the cultists arrive and they are led by the all-purpose goon, from the mayor. So this is a conspiracy. The mayor's working with the cultists.
Yep. The sergeant, you know, hears about this. He moves to arrest the mayor, and he ends up stabbing all the civilians, the mayor, and then flees into his basement, which you have to chase him down to his basement. He gets to the end of the tunnel, and there are cultists there who he begs for help, but they collapse the tunnel and trap him on our side. So we arrest him and execute him, you know, justice.
And as you pass the gallows, he just did like, first there are crows going after his eyes, and then he just keeps decomposing.
Yep. Until he's just a skeleton hanging from a noose that you pass by every time you go through here.
I mean, it's ghastly. I don't know why I'm laughing, except for the fact that it's neat.
Oh, it's awesome.
It's neat that they keep track of it.
It's a thing that you can do with this level of graphical fidelity.
Yeah.
You know, it would come off as kind of teenagey if it looked more realistic.
Yeah.
But doing it in an 8-bit style like this just ends up being, it's like reading 20 AD comics or something, you know, it just ends up being like, or like watching a Brian Yuzna movie.
Yeah.
You know, it's not serious enough to be grossed out by the gore. Like, it's just scudgy fun. You know,
it's like the less realistic the visual style, the more realistic they can be in just depicting the fact of something, which is if you leave a body up there, it'll get real gross.
And it becomes comedy.
Yes.
You know, from that, it becomes like delightful. Yeah. You know, not everybody has the violence and gore gene. Uh-huh. And one of the things about the violence and gore gene, I think that's interesting, is that it is it's not on or off. You know, like there's violence and gore that just absolutely squicks me out and I don't like it.
Yeah.
You know, I can't just do a Fangoria, just watching a movie where it's like, oh, watch people get skinned alive. Like, that shit sucks. I can't do it, you know, but you make it over the top a little bit more. You push it a little bit more, or you make it a little bit less realistic, and it becomes very delightful.
Yeah.
For me, like From Beyond is delightful and Wishmaster is gross.
No,
you know, and there's a difference between those two things. Like, some Mortal Kombat fatalities kind of squick me out a little bit, even though I think that they're fun. Whereas this is just absolute pure delight. So,
So we make our way to the palace of this region. The mountain is, you know, moderately length platforming challenge. Lots of deadly drops. The introduction here is these moving platforms that will move slowly, kind of along their path. You got eyeball enemies. The eyeball enemies are here. It's going to get way more complicated inside of the palace. Yeah.
Eyeballs are your enemies. Once you get to the palace here, Castica Palace, it's tougher. The basic enemies are these guys that teleport behind you and stab. They have these plague doctor masks. Once you get the rhythm, they're fine, but they will ambush you. Here, you know, you do not know that they're there. Those moving platforms we saw are added to all the other platforming complications we have. So things like those moving platforms on top of, you know, spike platforms and the like.
Yeah. So you've got to keep pace with this thing while avoiding the things that will knock you off. It's not Ninja Gaiden knockback that you have here, but it is present.
Yes.
You know, yeah. There is some knockback.
Again, a thing where, an argument for casual difficulty. IMO. Yes.
Yeah. There. Yeah. The treasure you get in this palace is at the end of an extremely long series of platforming chambers. This is the holy charge ability. This is that sideways double jump that you get. By charging up your melee attack, you will launch horizontally, even in the air, even in the middle of the jump.
The reason why this is at the end of a big complicated platforming thing is so you can take this on the way back.
Yeah, be lying.
You know, you just zip back and it's fun. Mm-hmm. You know? That's all the stuff I can bypass now. That's great. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
The boss of this is Apollyon. This is the ultimate baby Suggs. I'm going to stop saying that now that I know that you're not on the same page. Yeah. But if you ever want a baby Suggs, like, look at this guy. This is a big cherub, ugly cherub demon. Mm-hmm. He attacks with these fireballs. He flies around and will summon multiple red eyes at you. Yeah. And you can only attack him when he lands and his belly is exposed.
Yeah.
So you have to get in close, get past the eyes, and get in to damage him during these periods.
Yeah. He lands and he just kind of gapes his belly curtains.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Ouch.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's it. Like, you know, we have one more seal to go. There's a bonus dungeon that we can go to that ends up being, you know, we can get into now. We'll, you know, put you ahead of the curve. This sunken palace you can go to. With this holy charge ability, we can head to the east of the Stormheim castle, by jumping over the water and zooming across, to this very short, water platforming, dungeon, you know, nothing more complicated than we saw in, Stormheim itself, but it ends with a boss called Halthus.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. This guy, who kind of, has grapple moves. He's a grapple guy. And he has tentacles, there. He's kind of like a Venom or something like that's going on.
Mm-hmm.
Like he zips around.
He's doing SteamWorld Dig 2 grappling, where he is, shooting either vertically or horizontally to kind of, pull himself in these circles. Also, I love that he has this face that looks like a strong sad. He's got a big old frowny face on it.
Nice. He looks like that, a little bit like an Albin Urich too.
Yeah.
Albin Urich. I love he has skull shoulder pads as well. This is very funny. When he lands, his venom virus or whatever will take over for a little bit and he'll have exposed tentacles, where you can hit him. And this is how you get the best armor. Now that we have these two abilities, we can head up to Kadjanto Peak, which is the northwest corner of the map. Handsome Hans is there. In a tent, begging people not to tell people where he is. I'm sure if you're on the cult playthrough, you have to go kill him or you can rat him out.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Now I know what he reminds me of. Clever Hans, the horse from the 1920s who could do math.
Oh, does this character remind you of that horse?
Well, just the name, you know, adjective Hans.
Yeah. He does have adjective Hans going for him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was like, why do I keep wanting to say Clever Hans instead of Handsome Hans? And it's because of that horse, that famous horse.
That horse didn't put enough effort into its drip. It wasn't handsome enough for you. Horse drip. And wink. You know about winking and dripping, right?
Fuck no. I just barely know what drip is. That's like your outfit. Your steez.
I can't remember when winking and drip, I think, this is a tangent.
Okay.
I'm just going to go for it though. When, I was in eighth grade, we had a science teacher named Mr. Breed, not a great name for a teacher. And he was really stern. But he would talk to us about adult things, cause he didn't give a fuck.
Okay.
And the only two things I remember from the science class, sincerely, the only two things I learned from it is as you get older, your pubic hairs straighten out. So because Mr. Breed said to us, this is how you can tell who's leaving their curlies on the toilet seat. And keep in mind, we're in eighth grade, right?
Of course,
so like,
yeah.
This is a miracle. This is, we should have been able to go home for the day. Like this is a miracle, you know? The other thing though, is he talked about horses. When female horses are in heat, they do a thing called winking and dripping.
Oh no.
Which is exactly what it sounds like.
Oh no, 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 no.
And like, but again though, imagine the feast that an eighth grader's brain has with this.
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
me and Derek Hayes, just absolute, like disgusting, smelly little shits, like just absolutely in love with her own balls and puberty and all things shit and pee pee and poo poo. Uh-huh. Just now having winking and dripping to add to our dirty Mad Libs.
Oh.
You know? It's just, it was a, you know, in retrospect, to Sir with love.
Oh, Captain, my Captain. You know, in
retrospect, yeah, he was my Dead Poet Society in retrospect.
Dead Jockey Society.
Yeah, there we go. But anyway, winking and dripping, hands of Haas.
Oh, sorry, that really do.
It's a lot, man. Don't Google it. I'll tell you that much.
Don't get caught.
Yeah. that's what incognito browsers are made for, my man. We eventually get to this long bridge, and there's a wizard in a cage. And if you rush forward to help him, he says, "You know, stop, my lord. This is a ruse.
No.
And that big skeleton who burned down the house is here."
Yeah,
he pops down. These guys are going to become a normal enemy in the final dungeon, but for now they are like they're the Dark Souls equivalent of like a Taurus demon.
Yeah, yeah, you know? Yeah. It's similar to. I mean, we fought this boss when we were going after the skeleton that was haunting that grave. The big skeleton with a sword who does like a pound attack, right?
Yep.
Yeah.
Once we meet him, the wizard will upgrade your familiar spell to make it two doves.
Yeah,
which is really great.
Two for the price of one.
Yeah.
Kajanto Peak, as we're headed to the stronghold, the new platforming complication is crumbling platforms, you know, where you can only be on them for a short amount of time. Pretty straightforward when you're out here, but inside Kajanto, the stronghold there, you end up, okay, I need to jump between these two dropping platforms. I need to try to stay upright on these things while I wait. And so you're jumping from block to block, you know, just trying to wait for the other one to come back before you can make your jump. It is actually pretty nerve-wracking.
So then we get to the stronghold, Kajanto stronghold, this gross dank castle where the danger liquid, the gross water, is green acid. Mm-hmm. And there are crumbling platforms that complicate this.
Yeah.
And this is, again, we're in the final stretch of dungeon, so this is much tougher. There are a lot of mini-boss enemies here, these gigantic green ogres.
Yeah.
They do slow cleaver attacks. They're kind of a palette swap. The guy from the intro. And they give a lot of XP and money, but you can also avoid them now that we have the super air dash thing.
Mm-hmm. There's a neat screen where there's one of these on an upper level, and some of the blocks of that floor are the crumbling ones. So you'll be dealing with some folks, and then boom, this thing comes coming down. Yeah,
it's great. Yeah. The ceiling has these hanging bloody baby like fetus enemies here, some of which will fall down and kind of rush attack you. With these leaps, these flea man-esque leaps. Again, we have the language for this.
Yes. Yeah.
Lots of arrow traps. A lot of times shooting in opposite directions, which makes blocking them complicated.
Yeah. You'll be taking an elevator kind of down with these things on either side of you, and you have to just kind of like time the rhythm of turning left and right in order to block them as they shoot. You know, if you're not doing like ducking as well, it ends up being like you get into these big like zigzag runs where it's like, OK, we're going to ride down blocking these, and then we're going to ride up blocking the same ones, and then we're going to ride down again.
Yep. There's another mini boss here, like a more skinny ogre guy with these mushrooms growing off him, fights with a big sword. It's cool when you go here, there's a background of this guy hanging from this lattice of crucifixes, his guts strung out to make a pentagram.
It's like a droopy pentagram.
Give it to me.
It's strewn out like like streamers. Yeah, it's good.
Yes. Incredibly good.
Yeah. And the final boss here is Alistair, not final boss, but the boss of this. There's a treasure that you can get, this holy light spell. Will let you charge up your weapon. So you cast this and suddenly your mace swings will shoot projectiles, like holy light kind of things. Almost like a Mega Man kind of thing, so much so that you can even charge it. This ended up trivializing the my final boss, the Belphegor.
Gotcha. Yeah. I did not end up getting this.
Mm-hmm. It's useful.
I believe it. I just didn't want to go back to the dungeon. It's kind of a pain in the ass dungeon.
Yeah, it's really long.
Yeah. And just if you miss it, you miss it. If I were, again, nitpicks, this is also the first dungeon where there are blind leaps.
Yeah.
This is going to be a big thing during Urzon Citadel, but the idea that you can make a jump, you're fall down and you need to hold to the right. And if you don't know that, you could just die.
Yeah.
I think is not great game design. The other thing I would do if I were changing this is I would put the treasures on the critical path.
Yeah.
I understand incentivizing exploration for this, but this being the only one I missed and all the other ones feeling like kind of impossible to miss felt odd.
Yeah.
To me. We fight Alistair, who is the closest. He's like a Super Metroid style boss. It's largely about platforming. He looks a little bit like a Gug. He's this vertical mouthed guy. On the top of his head, with his weak spot is his tongue. It's his heart that's on it. And it's a platform chase where he swims under us and attacks upwards, sometimes sticking out his tongue for us to spank.
Yeah. So you got to get in close through the projectiles that the Gale of Summons adds as well to kind of get in. This is a long fight for me. The holy charge ends up making this a little bit easier because you don't need to close that distance. He just has a ton of health.
Yes.
Yeah.
This breaks the final seal. So you can access the final dungeon now. If you want to get the final dungeon, we have to go rout all the cultists. You go on a quest to go to all of the with your commander. I can't remember the guy's name, but there's like one legendary commander who's in the first town. Every time you talk to him, he says, if you keep doing good deeds, I might need your help.
Okay.
Someday. He says, okay, it's time to actually finally take out this cult. And he gives you a list of places to meet him at where his men will bust down the door into the different cult towns and you'll go in and you'll kill the cultists.
You've got to be the Untouchables. you're Elliot Ness.
Yeah, you're a tactical breach cleric.
Yeah.
during this and once you do that you get the Necronomicon, which accesses the final dungeon and final boss of this. So we're at the what can be the final dungeon or penultimate dungeon, the Urzon Citadel.
Okay. I didn't do that stuff, so you're gonna have to book report the final dungeon for me.
I will.
Yeah. So Urzon Citadel, if you don't have the Necronomicon, is very short. You get inside, there are some cultist enemies in pointed robes. They're pretty easy. They just attack with spears. Looks kind of like some stuff out of Blasphemous. And it's really just one big chamber before you get to the throne room where Belphegor is. He's this big bearded demon with a big old round belly and just a mighty patch of pubes. He's got like a Paul Bunyan beard that is his... what do some people call it, the treasure trail?
Yeah. It's a treasure highway.
Yeah.
It's a 4-lane treasure highway. He has going down to Belphegor balls. Pretty incredible. This guy.
And this guy's tough. His main attack is with this big trident, which will do a shitload of damage. He kind of attacks.
Oh, good. Sorry to interrupt you. I forgot about this. So you don't, if you do the true ending, you don't fight this guy.
Oh shit.
So you have to book report this guy because, he gets killed. If I recall. So it's been a little while since I played this. I got very ahead on work. I did a very classic Gary thing and got very ahead on work. And now I'm like back behind, cause I relaxed too much. But I played this a while ago. If I recall though, I think that, Baphomet kills Belphegor.
Gotcha.
And then you go into the final dungeon. So I didn't fight this guy. I was like wondering why this didn't seem familiar to me. and that's why.
Yeah. So Belvia, it's a tough fight. I actually needed to, so I didn't do the Sunken Citadel or whatever it was ahead of time, because his attacks were doing too much damage to me. You know, I had been upgrading my health and stuff, like I had stayed with the curve and done quests, but just didn't have enough HP. So I had to go get that good armor to make this happen. He's got this big trident, and he does it's a downward diagonal attack. Which, I mean, even with my health, it was doing most of my damage pool. No good. Mm-hmm. Also, he does little kicks when you're in real close. So if you dodge in, he will kick you. And if you're too far away, he stomps and drops blocks from the ceiling, which will do a ton of damage to you. And this is in addition to fireballs and these whirling cyclones of flame kind of things that he sends. He's got something for kind of every part of the screen. And my way of adapting to this was to use the Holy Light spell, get those long range attacks, focus on staying mobile, and have that very good armor so I could cope if I ended up taking a hit.
Gotcha. That sounds cool. Mm-hmm. Did not do that. Go ahead.
Yeah, so I will also say what my ending was, because if you kill him, you do get the moderate good ending or whatever it is, you know, very much like a Castlevania 2 ending. You will have hit him and beat him, but Alcidora takes fatal wounds in the battle, dies, and then the people of Darsov make this monument to him. But the final shot of the game is these two goat eyes, in the darkness, and it says, but the evil is lurking in the distance, just waiting to return.
Yes. It's called the martyr ending, I believe.
Gotcha.
Yeah. I actually forgot about something. When you're going getting the Necronomicon, there is a bigger dungeon you do. It's not just the cultist that you do. You go into a realm dungeon, which I thought was in this area, but I'm watching YouTube to refresh my memory, and it's not.
Okay.
So that's something I already did. And that is just a big complicated remix dungeon.
Okay.
That does all the stuff.
Doesn't have its own gimmick, but it takes the ones from the others.
Yeah. Exactly. If you have the Necronomicon, when you arrive here, you pull it out and it creates a portal. And a big hand grabs Belphegor and drags him in.
Mm-hmm.
And then you go into this portal and you fight Baphomet, who is a big titty ghost demon. It is a goat demon with gigantic pendulous breast and some of the biggest nipples I've seen in an 8-bit. Yeah. Have you seen these? Pull up an image of this. Check out these nipples.
are we talking big nipples, or are we talking areola? Well, what are
we're
we
talking both,
here?
Man. Okay. We're talking porque no los
got platters. Whoa, those are perky. Yeah that's yeah. Those aren't pendulous. That's
I guess they are perky.
That's sex. That's sex doll. Sex doll tits.
Yeah. With smaller sex doll tits in the form of nipples. This is a giant fight against this guy. You're on a platform. He jumps back and forth between each side, doing different attacks that there are counters for. So breathes fire, puts down a pentagram that summons birds, and then opens up his stomach and thousands of eyeballs come out at you, which you have to destroy. This is a two-phase fight. Once you've done enough damage, you jump high up in the air and then smash its head in.
Nice.
In silhouette. It's incredible looking. And then we get the second phase of it. When he comes down, he's kind of smashed up. Here. It's a fake out. Sorry. Again, I'm watching a thing to remind me. It looks like you're going to start a second phase, but he just explodes into eyeballs.
Gotcha.
So yeah, my bad. And then the super good ending of this is also bleak in a Warhammer way. You become the scourge of the land. You become, grotesque, lawful good, punishing every crime. Intense punishment, and it shows you and your crusaders walking through the world with a demon's head in your hands. There, it's very metal.
Yeah.
Yep.
Huh.
Yeah. Ending.
I can say for sure that I'm going to get that ending because I want to play this game again. It's real good.
I got to do the evil mode. At some point. That's real cool.
Yeah.
There's also, as we mentioned, if you get the ending, if you do what I did, but then you also get your demonology score up enough, you go into the future and fight a boss I didn't fight. No. Also, the one of the priests turns into a caterpillar at some point. Oh. I only know that because I watched a compilation of boss fights.
Uh-huh. And just saw all the surprising stuff, like, how in the world could I have missed this?
Yeah. I was like, who is this guy? In addition to boss fights, when you're playing the evil route, you lay siege to a bunch of towns and you fight kind of like NPCs almost. No. Like, you fight the different commanders there, which aren't quite boss fights. Like, they don't have bespoke moves, but they're like bespoke encounters. It's a lot of content.
Yeah.
So,
want to do it. And like, that's in addition to Contra stuff like that, that changes things. Like, I don't know. There's going to be like all kinds of there's all kinds of small changes with many of these different modes.
This game keeps on giving.
Yeah.
You know, this is a thing where, like, not only, you know, we talked about this before, recommend it. I don't know how much it comes through in the episode, but it's very fun in the hands.
Yeah.
These are well designed bosses and encounters that are fun to learn and feel fair. Obviously I'd like to see what these guys do next. I really would love it to be Infernax too.
Yeah.
I would like to see more fucked up dudes. I would like them to explore this play space. I would like a bigger, more expanded world. Mm-hmm. Not too much bigger. Like, the length of this is a big strength, but like, it's very rare that, you know, you and I are like the kings of God, games should be shorter. This is great. This is a short game. This could have been 2 hours longer and I would have been happy.
Yeah.
Like, when happier, like, it left me wanting more.
No.
Significantly more. Like, this maybe had a padding of 3 hours it could have used, which is like, you know, 150% of the game. You know, games very rarely leave me literally wanting more.
Yeah, it's kind of the best position to be in. It is the best way. You know, first impressions count for a lot, but those final impressions, you know, how it uses that goodwill, like, does it decide to cash it in on bullshit, or does it leave enough in the bank for you to be like, shit, man, like, I could use more, you know, like, that is one of the major ways that game quality can, you know, I mean, one of the major axes on which it can turn.
Yeah. It's also, when you get that final Necronomicon dungeon I was talking about, that's like the remix dungeon, that does a bunch of, you know, it also has a boss rush in there. So you fight the bosses again, which is fun. Some of them are a little bit mixed up. You fight multiples. So like the Leviathan, you fight two of them at once during that. Things like that are fun because they're a nice escalation. The platforming also gets a lot more complicated. And it always reminds me that, like, I actually really like tough platformers if they have this kind of constrained move set, and it's not all you're doing. Like, I end up liking Celeste a little bit less than a lot of my peers. And I've never gone in for like a Meat Boy really, but you give me something like this and I'm real into it, you know, or the platforming in Grime. You know, we talked about that on Bonfires at Jet. I love that platforming. You know, it kind of functions really well as a tough 8-bit boss game and a tough 8-bit platformer. Exactly pitched at the difficulty that I want. You know, like, we said this game was kind of tough. Some people are definitely gonna think it's too tough. There are also gonna be people who are like, this is not tough enough. It's not a massive core platformer. It's just tuned really well for me to keep me engaged.
You know, and it's got that make your own Sunday kind of appeal for the different ways it can be difficult, you know. And for me, it just ended up being that casual restart and nothing else. Just like that. Like, that was enough for this to kind of fall right into the valley where, you know, things were interesting, you know, challenging enough to be interesting, but there were no real walls that, you know, that I had, you know, no big knots to untangle before I got to see more cool shit.
There are so many more games that are more ambitious than this. You know, there are better games, but this is so in my Q zone that it's like hard to fucking fuck with. Like, I loved it. Great game. Great pick.
Well, I'm happy you enjoyed it. I'm happy that I enjoyed it. And if anybody goes and picks this up and plays it, I really hope you do as well. I think it's pretty likely. So,
Moving into admin, I have one special announcement I want to make real quick. If you're listening to this and you would like to see us at a convention in your town, I've been saying let us know. Let the convention know.
Yeah.
Like, you can let us know as well. But like, for example, if you're in the Pacific Northwest and so we've pitched a panel, the PRG, I see no reason not to be transparent. We're asking to be paid for travel and accommodations mm-hmm. because that stuff's really expensive. I don't know if people know this, but it costs us a lot of money mm-hmm. to do a convention appearance. Airfare is really expensive. Hotels are very expensive. We have to eat the whole time. Like, we lose a lot of money on those. Mm-hmm. So we've said, hey, pay to fly Cole out. I don't know if they'll do this for us. They're more likely to if you let them know.
If there's demand.
So if you want to see us there, and this goes for any other convention, let the people know mm-hmm. we're there. Like, if you live somewhere, you know, where, what is it, MAGFest? If mm-hmm. you live near MAGFest, if you go to MAGFest every year and you'd like us to be there, tell them.
Yeah.
Like, tell us, but tell them as well, because that's yes. the other half of the equation. And that is what's more likely to get us there and not take a gigantic bath on cost. Like, we're not trying to be stingy. Mm-hmm. It's just as a value proposition. Like, we love doing it. Mm-hmm. It's just really fucking expensive. And that's even when your car doesn't get stolen.
There's also those complicating factors.
Yeah. You know, we have the best job in the world. I'm not whining about it. Mm-hmm. It's just, they have a budget for this kind of thing. Mm-hmm. They can buy a plane ticket.
And even more than that, if our profile is right, if our profile in their eyes is high enough, then we get better time slots too.
That's the thing too.
Yeah. Yeah.
We Midwest Gaming Classic, which you heard last week, mm-hmm. that episode, it was really fun, but they put us like right before closing on the last day.
Yeah.
And the guy, came up to us. He's like, you guys really drew some people. Like, we should have put you at a better time slot. And I didn't, I wanted to be like, yeah, uh-huh. that is true. Yes, you should have, we don't always bring huge numbers, but we're not going to, we do better when we're in the thick of it. So, we want those things.
Yeah.
And if you want them for us and you want us to appear these things and come meet us and get swag and stuff, have a good time. Most people, find it fun to meet us. I found, mm-hmm. If you want that lit convention, it's no.
Yes.
And that goes not just for the ones I mentioned, like if there's one in your town or anything, we maybe don't have plans to go to them, but if we got, if somebody reached out and we're like, hey, we'll pay for accommodation, we're more likely to do it.
Yeah.
That is a way that we end up doing more conventions and stuff. If you want that.
Yeah.
The other thing is, if you are a non-white, non-cis, non-male, non-straight creator and you'd like us to boost your project, please send me an email at gary@duckfeed.tv. Please include your pronouns and the like, any useful information. This episode, I'd like to shout out a really cool sounding project that is by somebody known as Mundus is their handle. And I'm going to go ahead and just read mm-hmm. this because they say it better than I could have. This is a queer inclusive module for Werewolf the Apocalypse called Dead Mountain. Set in 1975, it tells the story of the last days of an ancient werewolf site, with its tale centering around a pack of queer werewolves living in the fictional mountain town of Trillium, Oregon. This horror series covers themes of extreme violence, generational trauma, and systemic marginalization, themes of found family and Greek tragedy. This game is created entirely by queer folks from the ground up, from the writing to the art to the copy editing. And this is going to, you can find information on this. This releases at Halloween, so quite a bit in the future, at songoftrillium.tumblr.com. But if you just want to get a taste, or if you don't play Werewolf the Apocalypse, you can go to deadmountain.podbean.com, where they are doing a radio drama of the module. I think that is worth checking out. It sounds super cool. Making a module for Werewolf of the Apocalypse. Right. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. This art is really cool on the Tumblr. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It looks super cool. So, I think that this is, something you, should check out, worth your time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
If you have something you'd like us to shout out again, that's gary@duckfeed.tv.
Yes. If you have thoughts about the games we are covering, we have the 7 out of 10 games, we have Infernax, we have Pentiment next week, and the premium episode for this month is Resident Evil 4, the 2023 remake, go to duckfeed.tv/contact and use that form to write in. Please, if you have thoughts about multiple games, make it multiple responses, and try and keep stuff a little bit brief, about 2 paragraphs or so, very specific. Mm-hmm. That helps us get more folks in.
And if you have thoughts about next month's games, which are Burnout Paradise, Jack 2, or Cadence of Hyrule, that deadline is, what is it?
July the 15th. Yes, July the 15th. It's always the 15th of every month.
I was trying to remember the month.
Oh no, no, yeah, it's my problem too. Yeah. Like I've said the wrong month several times this year.
Yeah. There's only 12 of those. I shouldn't get them mixed up.
I know.
Right? Yeah. If you want to support us, you can go to patreon.com/duckfeedtv. Give us $5 a month. Get you a lot of exclusive content. Mm-hmm. You get this month's bonus episode and all the previous bonus episodes and next month's bonus mm-hmm. episode, as well as whole bonus shows. You also support us, and it only mm-hmm. gets better from there. You go up to $10, you get more shows. You get up to $25 and up, you start being able to dictate games.
Yeah.
For us to do. And you get access to the Slack. In either case, a fun, cool place to hang out and talk sugar about Infernax.
Yeah. And your support helps us do things like hire a producer, Gwen, of whom we are very appreciative.
Yes. Big thanks to Gwen. Yeah. Gwen just released the music video for her band's Trash Sound Conglomerate. Mm-hmm. Their music video for Mamas Don't Let Your Babies Grow Up to Be Guitar Players. Mm-hmm. It is a funny music video, mm-hmm. and you can find that on YouTube.
Yeah. I think that's about everything.
Yeah. What should they watch out for until next time, Cole?
Until next time, I would say watch out for compassion. Burn that demon in the cage.
Yeah. Didn't want to get burned. Shouldn't have been a demon.
Shouldn't have been in a cage.